The legislative session starts next week, and HB 77 is one of the most talked about bills going into it. Today, we're going to hash out just how the bill overhauls the permitting process. We're going to find out why some groups think it goes too far, and we want to hear from you as we do it. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Alexandra Gutierrez. Our toll-free number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. Our local number for Anchorage is 550-8422, and our email is talk@alaskapublic.org. The future of land management is our subject today on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com. The Older Persons Action Group, publisher of Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide newspaper for older Alaskans and their families, can be read online at seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Over the past couple of months, Alaskans have packed town hall-style meetings over HB 77, a bill that tackles water rights, the permitting appeals process, and plenty more. The bill was introduced by Governor Sean Parnell as a way of, in his words, streamlining the permitting process. Advocates within the administration have testified that the legislation would get rid of unnecessary roadblocks to development, but critics say those roadblocks amount to public involvement and that they're necessary for responsible land use. With us to talk about what's in the bill and why the administration wants it is Ed Fogles, a deputy commissioner with the Department of Natural Resources. And with us to explain their reservations about the bill are Natasha Singh, an attorney with the Tanana Chiefs Conference, and Rick Halford, who served as Senate president as a Republican and has recently been campaigning against the proposed Pebble Mine. Welcome here today, and we're glad to have all of you. Deputy Commissioner, at least at nearly 10,000 words long, the bill is fairly complicated and changes a lot of pieces of state code. To start off, could you just walk us through it? What are the big things this bill does, and what are the most important parts to the administration?
Thank you, Alexandra. Yeah, I think it's really important for Alaskans to first understand why we actually even proposed this bill. I think it's very important to understand how important efficient permitting is for Alaska's economy. We must be able to allow activities to happen on state land to generate our economy, and we need to be able to do that in a responsible way to protect our other environmental resources. House Bill 77 is an effort on our part to look at statutes, look for inefficiencies, and fix those. The bill itself was grown through discussions with staff, people that have used the statutes day in and day out. When we first started this process of improving the permitting process a couple of years ago, we batched all these changes. We took the first batch, which was House Bill 361, which passed through the legislature 2 years ago without too much fanfare. The second batch was bigger and had a few changes that were far more controversial than anything in House Bill 361. Now, there are three changes in particular that really stand out as being very controversial, and that's the general permit provision, the appeals provision, and the water reservations provision. But it's also very important for Alaskans to understand that the bill does a lot more than address those three issues. A lot of other provisions are in there that help us do our work. It helps us modernize the land exchange process. So as we finalize the state's land status pattern in Alaska, we're able to talk to other entities such as native corporations and perhaps switch lands that we feel are better in each other's interest. A whole slew of other issues that are addressed by House Bill 77. But again, the three main ones that are really drawing the public's attention right now are the provision that allows us to issue general permits for activities on state land. And this is a provision that was intended to allow us to make more efficient permitting small activities with minor impacts, such as such as commercial guide camps, perhaps, or mooring buoys for commercial fishing boats. And the idea there is that you come in once, we put out a public notice for the general permit, and that goes through a public process. And if that all stands up to the process, then from then on, if somebody wants to put a mooring buoy, say, in a particular river that we've issued the general permit on, they just come to us, tell us where the buoy is, and pay the fees. And it just saves a lot of internal work for our staff. We've also proposing a change to raise the bar on who can actually appeal a DNR decision. It's important to know that almost all our decisions these days get appealed and challenged in one form or another. And this is a tremendous workload on us. Sometimes it takes years to resolve appeals. All we want to do is make sure that if someone appeals a DNR decision, they have to explain to us how they're affected by that decision. Right now, the way the statute's written, anyone on planet Earth can appeal any DNR decision for any reason whatsoever. And we just don't think that's right, and we don't think that's very efficient. So, and then the third change that's really drawing a lot of attention is our proposal to change the water reservation statute. And that's kind of a complicated water permitting statute. And I'll just do a quick thumbnail explanation of that, if that's okay with you, Alexandra.
That's okay. It's a complicated process.
Right. Well, all waters in Alaska belong to the people of Alaska, and DNR is entrusted to manage those waters for the quantity. The Department of Environmental Conservation is responsible for the quality. DNR is responsible for the quantity. There are three ways that we manage the quantity. Those are water rights, water reservations, and temporary water use permits. If you want to use water in Alaska in any substantial quantity, you need to come to us to get a permit. If it's a minor amount of water for a short period of time, you get what's called a temporary water use permit. And that's pretty easy to do and not that big of a deal. It's revocable at any time if we see things aren't working right. A water right is probably the biggest tool we have, and that is, like, if you have a well in your house, you should probably apply for and get a water right for the quantity of water in your well, so that if someone comes in later and starts wanting to take water, they can't take any more than that would infringe upon your quantity of water. And those are a little harder to get and very important for Alaskans. Neither of those two tools are touched by this HB 77. The third tool is a water reservation. And that is a tool we have to make sure that there's enough water left in a particular water body for a variety of purposes, whether it's fish habitat, navigation, recreation, or water quality. And that's a public asset. It's a quantity of water that needs to remain in a water body for public purposes. We have found over the last couple years, that we have had groups that have applied for water reservations, and it takes a long time to get the data to adjudicate a water reservation, about 5 years for habitat reservations. And we've been challenged that while someone's applying for a reservation for those 5 years, we shouldn't let any other Alaskan use that water. And we fundamentally disagreed with that, and that was actually taken to court. We were litigated over that. And that's why we had proposed that, as in most other states in the nation, that only public agencies, whether state, federal, or local, be allowed to apply for and hold reservations. And that was the proposed change, and that probably got more opposition than any other change in HB 77. And a lot of that, I think, is just misinformation. We are not removing any Alaskan's right to use water. We're trying to prevent frivolous challenges. And again, on all of these, we've heard a lot of public comment. We're trying to solve very specific problems that we see. I think if you look at those problems, we need to agree on what those problems are. HB 77 was our attempt to solve those problems. We've heard from a lot of people that we're taking the wrong approach. We are now in the process of revisiting those provisions, and we're working to see if we can craft different solutions potentially to those problems.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ed. Rick, you had some of the concerns that the deputy commissioner just discussed. Those were some of yours. I remember that when the legislature gaveled out last session, the bill had passed in the House, gotten through the committee process in the Senate, and it was just one vote away from getting sent to the governor's desk. In the end, it got stuck in the Rules Committee, which is like purgatory for bills that may not have the votes to pass. And I remember your public testimony being pretty influential in slowing that process down. I guess what are still your top concerns with this bill?
Well, I think Ed really covered the intent side. The problem is you have to look at what could happen in any administration at any time in the future. And the three areas that he went through, the initial provision on general permits starts with the language, notwithstanding any other provision of law. And when that's used, it basically has the opportunity or has the ability to override any other issue that has gone before it, except in four very limited categories dealing with parks and reserves. But, you know, the MATSU had a terrible time dealing with shallow gas leasing and its impact on small parcels and things like this. And compromises came out of that and the process went forward. But there's a lot of things over the last 30 years where there's been a compromise between timber interests and access interests and environmental interests and fisheries interests. And when you use the language, notwithstanding any other provision of law, you have the potential of overriding all of those compromises in a wholesale way. The general permit is not limited to small projects. The examples that Ed uses, I agree with. I have no problem with a general permit law. But general permits, remember, once you get the public notice for the general permit system, then an individual general permit, which may be a stream crossing or something significant if it's in an area where you have a lot of siltation and you're talking about heavy equipment, but it may be fine if you're talking about upstream big boulders and not any real impact. But the point is, you don't get specific notice. So notice and opportunity to be heard is limited, and the limitation is only that these things have to, anything that doesn't create a likelihood, so a probability of significant and irreparable harm. That means a huge number of things go in the general permit category or could go in the general permit category. If they wanted to go the other direction, instead of using the notwithstanding language and say there are created general permits for this list of things, or there can be created by administrative action general permits for this list of things in these sizes for this short duration, then I think you've got a reasonable general permit statute. The second thing is the process. Of course, the process starts with notification. It starts with standing. It starts with opportunity to be heard. And I can understand that an administrative agency that is tired of appeals, is tired of having to deal with the public on things that it doesn't consider to be reasonable. But that is one of the basic obligations of democracy, is to listen to people. And if you don't listen at the administrative level, you often end up having to deal with it at the court level. And it doesn't change the court standards for who has standing, who has opportunity to be heard, and who gets notification of what's happening. So I think it pushes things toward the court system, away from the administration, and it doesn't work. You know, the fact is that if you're going to serve in a public position, whether it's in the executive branch, legislative branch, you have to listen to what the people have to say about what you're doing. And the sooner you do it, the more you do it, the better off you're going to be. You will succeed if you don't hide, if you try and go forward rapidly, efficiency, economy. All these things are code words for I'm tired of having to do so much listening. And that's the wrong approach. I think make it clear, make it simple, make it straightforward, and listen, and you get somewhere. Finally, with regard to water reservations, you know, this is an interesting system. The same bill makes it easier to get multiple temporary use permits to take water out of the stream. You have the existing system that allows you to appropriate and get a, a position of appropriation in terms of order of appropriation that takes water out of streams. The only thing it limits is the ability of those to keep water in a stream. And it's not just limiting that ability for a public purpose. It also might be a private purpose for recreation. It might be a private purpose for a mixing zone. It might be a private purpose for something else. But the point that it needs to be held in trust, I think, is a good point. But there are a lot of very, very effective trustees for the long-term future and the balance between development and fisheries and some of these other things that really are taken out of the picture by this action. Plus, it's a retroactive action. Some of these entities with the Department of Fish and Game's help, and by the way, I was interested that Ed didn't mention Fish and Game in the balance of this process, because you really have a public health organization, you have a real estate organization, and you have a fish and game organization. And the fish and game organization has a huge interest in the protection of the phenomenal values that we have in our fisheries. That also is a major portion of it. It's not just the quality for public health, and it's not just the ability to sell resources for the economy. It's also to maintain the existing economy based on the fisheries. But streamlining is not an excuse for limiting the public process. The use of the notwithstanding language is a mistake. A straightforward list of simple, short-term general permits can be a good idea. And water reservations should be available to keep water in the streams. And particularly, probably the best example of this is any foreign corporation can apply for and get into the process easily to take water out of a stream. They can apply for all of it. They don't necessarily get all of it, but they can apply for all of it and be in line to get all of it if they can perfect their use of it. And to turn around and say that nobody else can apply to keep water in a stream except the government entity. And I think tribes are probably the best example. They've been trying to protect these resources for eons, and somebody can take them away, but the right of a tribal organization to protect the water in its area is taken away with all the other rights.
And Natasha, I know that that's one of the concerns for TCC. What are tribal organizations thinking about this bill right now?
So for Tanana Chiefs Conference, we represent 37 federally recognized tribes. And the Section 42, which excludes tribes, we sought an amendment to that section last session, and we failed to get an amendment. And it was just surprising that the tribal governments, they are, in many cases, the only local governments in our rural villages are excluded, and we did not get any support from the administration on our amendment. So that was the tribe's number one concern, and we don't have a reasonable explanation of why that tribes were excluded. And we had hoped that we could work, and it's great news that Deputy Commissioner Ed Fogles has stated that they are relooking at all these other sections, because as the tribes study the language, we try to think about all of our various interests. Because while tribes, yes, they seek to protect the land, they have environmental interests, they want to protect our subsistence resources, but our tribes also are seeking potential development. Our village corporations and regional corporations, our sister organizations, they have development projects in mind. So we have various interests, but we don't think that the language, especially in Section 41, where they changed the standing to adversely affected, is the way to go about it. Although we do feel like, I think our tribes do agree that the permitting process probably needs some revisions to make things run more smoothly and less unnecessary work on behalf of DNR. We think it can get done differently.
Well, let's go to the phones real fast. Remember, you can always call in at 1-800-478-TALK. And for our Anchorage listeners, you can call 550-8422. And you can email us your questions at talk@alaskapublic.org. Right now, we've got Bob from Soldotna. Welcome, Bob.
Hello. Good morning, Steve. And was I here right? Is Rick Halford online, too?
Yes, I am.
That's correct.
Yeah, Rick. I was just a kid when you were representative in the House, I worked as a page during the second session of the 11th legislature, and that little exposure woke up my eyes. But I am against, I applaud your efforts in removing Pebble Mine and talking about it. HB 77, I don't think is a good bill for most of the reasons that you just explained or have not yet explained. Taking the public voice out of what we want to do with our resources and our land and water, I don't think is a good thing. You know, legislature let the coastal zone management sunset. And, you know, I heard through some sources that that was mostly because they didn't want the Native folks over there in Bristol Bay to have the final say in whether that mine was going to go through or not. And also, I think, you know, too much business is being done behind closed doors with this current administration, with these big companies, big oil, foreign mining interest, and such. And I just think it's a bad bill. Take the people's voice out of legislation in regards to people's resources. It's not a good thing.
Bob, do you have any questions for our guests while you're on?
No, I just that was pretty much it. I just want to express my voice in that, and you know, I think a lot of we have this Chewitna coal project over there too, where they want to dig up the salmon stream. I don't think that's a good idea either. But no, I just don't think HB 77 is a good idea, and I applaud Rick and the others on their efforts and stopping this legislation.
Well, thanks for coming on, Bob. While we're waiting for other callers, in the meantime, you know, Ed, you've heard some of the issues that have been raised, and you've mentioned that DNR is now looking at ways to potentially shape the bill so it could be more palatable to some of the criticisms. What are the changes that you all might be comfortable with?
Well, Alexandra, we've received a lot of public input over the last several months in particular. As I mentioned, I think one of the biggest lightning rods in this bill right now is this provision for general permits. And as we stated numerous times on the record in the last session, our intent was clearly for this provision to apply to small activities with minor impacts to DNR statutes. And again, that was the intent, and we think that can be clarified in the bill. And so we are working right now to figure out ways to actually specify which statutes the notwithstanding provision applies for, and put bounds on what these general permits would look like, and also make sure that it's required to have that, at a minimum, that public notice up front, because there are people that challenged us that the bill didn't even require that, which was always our intent. So I think that's one place where we're really going to focus on, trying to come up with some better ways to craft that part of the statute. The other part that we're looking at very carefully are the water reservations, the change to the water reservations. And I definitely understand Natasha's concerns about the tribal entities. I think the original thinking that we had when we proposed the legislation was that it should be that it's a public asset and it should be held by a public entity. And I totally agree that tribes are quite often the closest thing you have to a local government out in rural Alaska. But there are other parts of Alaska where they're not. They don't represent the majority of the people within their area. And so it makes it just a little tougher to figure out how that would work. But nevertheless, I think we're relooking at that word person that the original bill pulled out. We're looking at ways that maybe we can put that word person back in. We're We're still working on the language at this time, but that's definitely a focus of our efforts right now.
All right. We're going to go to Peter from New Studio Hawk next.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Peter. I'm 100% resident of New Stiak, and I really don't like this House Bill 77.
What are your concerns specifically?
What they're doing. Go ahead.
Oh, what? Tell us your concerns, and let us know if you have any questions as well.
Come again?
Oh, tell us how you feel about the bill.
The bill is, I don't think it'll work. It'll contaminate our water. State will have no funding to clean up the water. They will just get the money, and they won't have enough money to clean the water up. Mm-hmm. And all our environment and animals and plants will die off. We've seen it in Lower 48, how those tribes got demolished from having their water rights, and they've been given a gallon of water each day, and I don't want to see our community go through that process, because the state never have a long-range plan to do research on how they're going to clarify the fix of the water.
And while you're on, do you have any questions for any of our guests right now? We've got Deputy Commissioner Ed Fogles with the Department of Natural Resources, Rick Halford, who served in the legislature for many years, and then Natasha, who is the General Counsel for the Tanana Chiefs Conference.
Well, I'm just kind of puzzled. The state, at first, they said they didn't want DNR to have public comments, and now they're starting that public comments. And like that other person said, they work behind our backs, and we're just a little village that rely on the water system. Can you help us do a better management on mining development? Because it's a concern not just here, but all over Alaska. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Peter. We're going to go from Hal from Seward next.
Hi, this is Hal in Seward, and I have both a question and a comment, and I guess it's the same thing. And my question is why is this bill still here? I work with a conservation organization that has been using the vast or most of its time and resources to fight this bill from its inception and introduction into the legislature, and it was stalled. The only reason it was stalled in the legislature is because there had been an enormous amount of public opposition to it, including numerous tribal resolutions that opposed it, and yet it still seems to be alive. And I guess our opinion is that the reason it still exists is that it's the classic example of privatization, the governor's efforts to privatize water and other rights in the state, as opposed to the human right to water that has global recognition now. Even our Constitution, the Alaska State Constitution, says, sure, you can issue water rights to private entities in the energy industry, but that is specifically subject to general uses for fish and wildlife, that meaning the public. Therefore, this resource is owned by the public. And my question is how can the state continue to push a bill that is attempting to defy its own constitution, in addition to this public right, and hand it over basically to the oil, gas, and mining industries?
Mm-hmm. Ed, do you have any response to Hal's question and comment?
Yeah, I would like to respond to Hal's question. I think there's, again, there's a misconception about House Bill 77. It does not privatize water rights. And in fact, the intent was just the opposite. It was to take water reservations and put them more in the sphere of the public agencies, not the private entities. So I think that is a misconception. People need to be real clear. There's no intent here to privatize water reservations or water use. Water rights are unchanged by this bill. Anybody can still come and apply and use water just the way they always have. And I think it's also important to understand that nothing in this bill does anything to Alaska Department of Fish and Game protections. They still have the responsibility to make sure there's enough water left in every water body, plenty of water left for the fish and to maintain that fish habitat. So that's their fundamental responsibility. And as Rick reminded me, I should have probably emphasized that earlier, but you know, Commissioner Campbell from Fish and Game has testified on numerous occasions on this particular point, that they're still responsible for protecting fish and the fish habitat, and House Bill 77 doesn't change that. And if we have to work with the legislature to propose some changes to clarify that, then that's fine. We'll just have to do that.
All right. Well, Hal, thank you for calling in to Talk of Alaska statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
While we're here on Talk of Alaska discussing HB 77, a bill that would overhaul the permitting process and that has gotten a lot of public attention over the past few months. I'm Alexandra Gutierrez, and again, we have with us Deputy Commissioner Ed Fogles with the Department of Natural Resources, Rick Halford, a former state legislator, and Natasha Singh with the Tanana Chiefs Conference. We're going to go to the phones again. We've got Roberta from Homer.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And so I've got a lot of concerns with HB 77, and Governor Purnell and his administration seems to be wanting to do big government, even though Republicans are supposedly against that. This is an erosion of rights, and I really can't read it any other way. And trust in government is at an all-time low, and we've got a landscape of rollbacks. We lost the Alaska Coastal Management Program. We're the state with the most coastline, the only state in the union that doesn't have that. That's a travesty. We've got the Clean Water Act, the state takeover. We've got mixing zones and salmon streams with dilution as solution of pollution, cruise ship pollution, pesticides around schools. Critical habitat rollbacks are being discussed right now. So we've got some big issues here in Alaska, and allowing the DNR commissioner to be the big say, saying that we Alaskans all over the state, we have to prove that we've got standing to appeal when there are some horrendous problems with climate change and ocean acidification that affects us all. So trying to take the people's rights away is a really bad idea, and this bill is all about that. I've got one idea that I think could change the whole landscape.
What's your idea?
I want us to start thinking of salmon first in all legislation. SOS, Save Our Salmon. If this whole HB 77 took that salmon came first, not corporations, not oil and gas, not mining, not jobs. Jobs are important, but there's a lot of sustainable ways to do jobs without raping and pillaging this beautiful state. So I would like to suggest that we literally stand everything on its head and that we say salmon comes first above all. That would do a lot in environmental concerns, that would make sure we have our resource left for generations. Someone in Homer at the hearing said, we are now not one, nowhere in the world have they been able to save salmon when big development got as big as it's being talked about now in Alaska. We've been on a balancing act for a long time where we haven't superseded that cliff. We haven't gone on the cliff, off the cliff, but we're getting ready to go off the cliff with HB 77, with talking about, even talking about Pebble Mine, with Chewitna, with oil and gas, with roads to all resources. So I just would like a chat about the salmon first concept.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for coming on, Roberta, and bringing that up. Rick, you know, we've heard Pebble brought up a couple of times. We've heard, you know, concerns about how this legislation would affect salmon habitat. Do you see any potential impact that this legislation as written could have on Pebble?
I don't see any direct impact, and I think Pebble is really a huge other question. It's not related specifically, but it's obviously related generally in terms of priorities and what you do. There may be some provisions that would make it easier to go around something that relates to Pebble, but really an awful lot of the Pebble issues are going to be decided at the federal level because of the federal permits required. But the issue in this bill is really balance. The notwithstanding language did potentially override all the Title 16 fish and game statutes with regard to general permits. And that language, I know they're thinking of changing, and I've just heard that they're gonna change that. And that's a step in the right direction. But the fact that it was ever in there was, I think, a dangerous precedent. But, you know, the balance in terms of water rights. Foreign corporations can apply to take water out of the streams. And to say that water is a public asset and should be held in a public entity, we don't do that for those who would take the water out. And it's only proposed that we not allow private entities to have a stake in keeping the water in. It's as if we assume that the Creator put the water in the wrong place and we've got to fix it. And I think history shows that's not the case, whether it's salmon or habitat or anything else. I think the system needs to maintain the balance that it has, and there can be some changes with regard to general permits, small, limited duration, and specific. But I think the general idea that we're somehow going to streamline the process without substantially limiting public input is a mistake. And the public input will come somewhere. It will either come in the administrative agencies or it'll come in the court system, because this doesn't change the court rules. The same people that are excluded from the administrative process have the right to appeal to the court system. And if they do, they appeal without the administrative record, and it costs more money, and it's more of a problem further down the road. Again, it's the obligation of those in the process to listen to the public. And that's a lot of what this is about. Listening is sometimes cumbersome. It takes a lot of time. It takes money. It takes a process. But that is a process that's owed to the public, and the changes to that process don't work. Finally, there's one kind of an insidious overlap, and that is that if you're a public interest litigant who's looking out for the broad public future interest, and you go to court and you lose, you don't have to pay the legal fees of the winning side as long as you meet that public interest standard. But this bill sets up a system that you basically can't, in the administrative side, even appeal unless you prove you have a specific personal interest. Well, that takes you out of the public interest litigant category. And then you can have the case where former Senator Vic Fisher, Constitutional Convention delegate, former First Lady Bella Hammond, are being sued for legal fees for an obvious public interest issue that they brought to the court system. And it's just, that is a very, very dangerous precedent. And those who want to go forward at all cost have always identified public interest litigants in any category as their enemy. It's a mistake. Public interest litigants are often the people that bring the most important issues before us, and they will continue to do that through the court system, even though they can't do it in the administrative system. And trying to short-circuit that is going to cost more, it's going to be more difficult, and it's not going to be effective.
And we're going to go back to the phones. Remember, you can call us at 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK. And if you're in Anchorage, you can call at 550-8422. We have Lynn from Palmer on the line.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to comment today. I have two brief comments, and they're very related to sort of this question of balance. And my comment, and then I have a question for Mr. Bogles, is I think I really agree with the need to sort of balance our permitting processes and our public input, I guess, and balance development with protecting our resources. What seems to be sort of missing is a process that the public trusts and a process that the public feels good about. So I think if stakeholders beyond the state were included more in the process of developing solutions to some of these permitting problems, the public would feel more heard, and we would have more trust in both the state and DNR in the ultimate decision. And I noted very early in the call that Mr. Vogel said that, you know, when at least originally with House Bill 361, that they went to staff and looked at what were the problems. Well, it's pretty clear that DNR staff is very understaffed, and they're going to have problems, but those aren't necessarily where the problems should be from the public's perspective. So I guess I'd like to have Mr. Vogel comment on how could stakeholders be involved earlier on in the process, and maybe in the development of House Bill 77, were other stakeholders besides staff and administration included in looking at some solutions?
And Ed, do you have a response for Lynn?
Yeah, Lynn, I think you raised some really good points there. You know, a number of years ago, when we first started this effort to look at the permitting systems, we did go out for a statewide series of public meetings on permitting, and we went to all the major communities in Alaska and held a series of sort of forums to talk about permitting issues. And we got some pretty good ideas and some good response on a lot of those from a lot of those issues. We also spooled up a website where we invited the public to tell us their thoughts and their ideas for how we could make our permitting process run better. So we did make a substantial effort to involve the public in this discussion. Now, granted that it's not always easy to get the public excited about a dialogue about permitting, and we probably didn't get as much input as we would have liked, but we did make the effort, and I've heard a lot in my 3 years in this position from the public on what they think is working right and what they think is working wrong. I mean, can we do better at that? Absolutely. If there are ways that people have that we can work with the public and have this dialogue, and that's something to definitely consider as we go forward. So I will definitely work on that, Lynn.
And Natasha, we know that this week a group of about 30 tribal councils and Native Village groups are going to be delivering about, I guess, 30 resolutions to the governor. And you talked a little bit about your concerns earlier, but I guess what would you say are kind of the biggest changes that TCC, for example, would like to see? What should we expect in this package that's going to be delivered?
Well, I think just including tribes in Section 42, we absolutely need the inclusion of tribes. Yes, I understand as comment that in for some communities, tribes don't represent the majority, but in most of rural communities, tribes do represent the majority of the people. And then in the other municipal elections, you don't have the majority of the people going out to elect. So our tribes absolutely need to be included in Section 42, or the Tanana Chiefs tribes will continue to oppose HB 77. We also need some changes to the standing provisions in Section 41, and I would like to see some better explanation on this general permitting. But I look forward to seeing what's going to be offered by DNR in some of these solutions. Basically, I think this is taking the voice of the people and democracy out of the statute, what's currently being proposed. And if we can see democracy and the basics of democracy placed back in with proper notice and public input, then we could be supportive of a bill, mm-hmm. of the bill.
And we're going to take one last call before we go to a quick break. We have a different Peter from New Studio Hawk. Peter, welcome.
Hello. This is Peter Christopher from New Studiac, and I represent our community and the corporate under the corporation. And what we have within our New Studiac River is that 125 acres of land, and we have four major villages on this river of the New Studiac, and New Studiac is Bristol Bay, one of the Bristol Bay villages, and you know that, or the world should know, or Alaskans should know that 80% of the Bristol Bay corporations oppose any kind of development, especially the mining. If the state is able to give easy permits under general permitting, I don't think it's right. We need to protect our renewable resources. Not only that, our freshwater fish, which are dependent on those salmon that return and spawn out in our rivers of the Bristol Bay fishery. For the expected returns of our salmon is 26.5 million of renewable salmon. And for example, for New Studiac River, our runs for the king salmon was up to 120,000 that comes up to this New Studiac River. And we know our salmon, and even us as Alaskan people, need to have that clean water. And our renewable salmon needs clean water to spawn. What we don't like to see is any development that will impact or destroy our clean water within our rivers. It's so important to keep that in place. I've traveled down to Nevada and I've seen the impacts from the old minings that had destroyed the water and the rivers, and the communities have to depend on for the government to buy them bottled waters. Here in Alaska, in the state of Alaska, so far majority of our waters are clean, and we should keep it at that. And
Well, thank you, Peter, for joining us here today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Alaska Premier Dental Group, providing full-service dental care for the entire family with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Service information at smilealaska.com. Alaska's public schools have new standards in English and math, setting high expectations for students. Students who meet these goals will be ready for success after high school, whether in the military, on the job, or in an apprenticeship, technical school, or college. Ask your school for parent guides to the standards or learn more online at education.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development.
Well, we're here talking about House Bill 77, and we have time for just a couple more callers before we wrap up the program. Matt, you're here with us from Sitka.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. It's raining fish down here. It's just an inch and a half every 6 hours or something like that. I heard the deputy commissioner, I think his name, I might have it wrong, is Goble Fay.
Ed Fogles.
Oh, sorry about that. It wasn't intentional. Sometimes it takes years to permit a project. And he said that as if that was a bad thing. You know, if DNR had had the authority to permit the Pebble Mine, we would have already been losing our incredibly world-class salmon fishery in Bristol Bay. Now, the two reasons worldwide that salmon, Atlantic salmon, and both the West Coast are declining and have declined is because of loss of habitat and water quality. Now, I'm not at all comfortable with relying on government agencies to represent my interests. That just doesn't work very well. I think the people in South Central ought to pay very close attention to HB 77 in light of, among many other things, what's happening with their salmon there. That it just is a disaster, and they ought to be proactive, and they shouldn't be divisive in terms of gear groups. Sport fishermen and commercial fishermen alike have a vested interest in protecting those fish. This is a very dangerous bill. I'm very uncomfortable with it. I am a commercial fisherman down here in Southeast. It scares the hell out of me, and I think people in Alaska, it should scare them too if they care at all about their fish.
And is there anything that you think could make it better, or do you just, it sounds like you just want to scrap it?
I think the process works right now. It doesn't work for, a mining entity that wants to rape and pillage. It works to protect, the process now works to protect a public interest, and it's the public's water, right? It's not some, mining entity's water. I'm not an expert in this field at all. I don't have any background in it. I'm a commercial fisherman, and we down here have been victims of an international treaty that penalizes fishermen in Southeast Alaska for loss of habitat on the Columbia River and water quality. Water quality and habitat are the things that we as people can do to protect the future of this incredible salmon resource that all Alaskans share. And this bill, I see it as a threat.
Well, thank you, Matt. We've had time for one more question. We're going to go to Cody from Dillingham.
Hi.
Hi.
I have one question for Commissioner Fogel.
Mm-hmm. What's your question?
I've been following a portion of this bill with interest for a while because locally here in Bristol Bay there's a specific section of the bill that talks about exploration in Chicoutimi Lake for feasibility study. It's in the Woodchuck State Park, which is the nation's largest state park. The House bill that initially brought this up was House Bill 137, and I listened to a huge negative comment session in opposition to House Bill 137 last winter. So my question is, why has House Bill 137's language, which again was very controversial, why has that language been included in House Bill 77 when it was such a controversial bill? Adding it to this one just didn't seem to make sense. So What has the special provision for?
Ed, do you have an answer for that?
Yeah, I can address that. Well, I guess you're probably asking the wrong person because it wasn't myself or the administration that put that provision in the bill. The bill that the governor submitted did not have that provision in it. That was put in by the legislature itself. So as to what their reasoning was, there is an issue there. The Woodchuck State Park legislation allows for potential hydropower development on certain lakes within the park, but not Lake Chicoutimi. And so the intent of that provision is it's not to allow hydropower in Lake Chicoutimi. It's just to allow the study to see whether hydropower may be someday feasible. So people need to understand that the provision does not allow hydropower in Lake Chicoutimi. It's just for the studies. And again, it wasn't something that that we had originally put in the bill.
And as we wrap up, I mean, do you have any final points to address some of the questions and comments we've heard today?
Yeah, I'd just like to a couple of things. One is I think Matt from Sitka pointed out that why is it bad that projects take years to permit? Well, some projects are supposed to take years to permit. I mean, every major mine project that's ever been developed in Alaska has taken years to permit. And that may be fine for projects of that magnitude. But there are other projects, and I'll have to tell you that the process doesn't work for commercial fishing. One of the provisions in this bill was specifically asked for by the commercial fishing industry, and that's the shellfish growers. They have an issue with the way the Tidelands leasing system works, and they needed a fix, and that's a piece of House Bill 77 was specifically to help the commercial fishing industry. So people need to understand that the permits that we're talking about in House Bill 77 are not necessarily the big giant mines and oil and gas projects. They're the little projects, the small mom-and-pop operations that are out there in Sitka, whether it's a hatchery or anywhere else in Southeast or South Central. So that's important for people to understand. And then, again, I just wrap up by saying, again, nothing in this bill is intended to diminish the authorities of Fish and Game for protecting salmon or DEC in protecting water quality. You know, we've heard a lot of public input. People have basically told us that there are certain provisions of this bill that they don't like. We're looking at those provisions to see if we can change them so that we can alleviate some of those concerns.
And Rick, do you have any final points?
Well, there's really three bills involved here. There's a general permitting bill that needs significant amendment so it doesn't do what was stated to be unintended, and that is override other statutes and all the compromises of the last 30 years. I think that's one bill. Another bill deals with standing notice and all the public process that the public has a right to be involved in the process. And the third bill is a water reservation bill. And if we're going to live up to our constitutional obligation, that water reservation bill should have a presumption for the maintenance of flow for the constitutional provision that says reserved for fisheries and wildlife values. That could simplify a lot of what DNR has to deal with. If the presumption were for fisheries in anadromous streams, what you'd have is the user would then have to prove the water reservation necessary.
And Rick, that's all we have time for today here on Talk of Alaska. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Natasha. Thank you, Ed, for coming on today. We appreciated hearing from you. And thanks to our crew. We've got Dave Waldron and Monica Goki. Again, this was Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. Since 1978, the Older Persons Action Group has been the publisher of Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide newspaper for older Alaskans and their families. They now offer a digital version online at seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.